Welcome to the Wayfinder Psychedelic Podcast, a space for seekers, healers, coaches, and curious souls navigating the inner terrain of transformation. I'm Joy Whitmore.
And I'm Samantha McLennigan. Together, we explore the intersection of wayfinding wisdom, psychedelic healing, and the magic that unfolds when we slow down and listen deeply to ourselves, to the medicine, and to one another. This podcast is part story sharing, part soul inquiry, part practical toolkit, all rooted in reverence for the feminine path of transformation. Let's begin.
Yay! So today we're joined by another member of our collective foundational members. Kristen's with us today. Yay. Hey, Kristen.
Hi.
Hi. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good, good. We have a lot of stuff to talk about. We're super excited. The three of us are huge, huge mu music fans in all genres. We don't even know where to start. Samantha, where should we take off today?
Well, yes, we have a lot to cover, a lot of really interesting stuff. We have personal stories to share. We have science, and I know that we're just going to have a lot of really great and interesting conversation because this is, music is more. It's so much more than just, sounds and playlists that we do for these psychedelic journeys. There's real magic to it. There's real magic to it. And so that's part of what we're going to explore today. And Joy, I'd say you're probably the biggest music fan. Maybe the biggest music fan I know. And you have had several really intimate experiences with music and psychedelics. You want to start by talking about that?
Sure, thank you. And I'm going to take it back even a step further because music became such an important part of my life from as early as I can remember recognizing the lyrics to songs. And that might have been, let's say, 1986, because I was 11 and I had a little, portable radio right above my bed in the slot. And, I listened whatever was on the radio. And I just remember hearing Wrapped Around Your Finger by The Police. And I was listening to the words. I'm sorry, I got that wrong. King of Pain by The Police. And he says, "There's a little black spot on the sun today." And my 11-year-old self was like, "What is this all about? Why is there a black spot on the sun? Why is there a skeleton choking on a crust of bread?" And so I think that's where it started for me because then at that time we were, using cassette tapes, CDs shortly followed. But I remember getting my cassette tape from Columbia House and opening it up to read all the lyrics because I wanted to know what was in the music, what was, music written about. What were people going through? And so I just wanted to share that because it really has shaped who I've become. And I'm fascinated by lyrics and I feel like there's just a deeper message there. But yeah, so I think at times I've shared my story around psychedelics as being mostly recreational use when I was younger. But there was a very significant time where I used music and in reflecting on it almost 30 years later, wow, I'm realizing that it was kind of a therapeutic journey for me. And this was back in the time where I had one of those big stereos with, it was like 4 foot tall. I had the two speakers, one on each side, a five disc CD changer at the top, and the dual cassette deck. And my friends were out for the night. I had a roommate. I don't even remember where they went. And I think the experience was actually LSD. And I decided to put five Led Zeppelin CDs in the five disc changer and just put it on random. And I proceeded to lie there in front of those speakers and have a very significant journey, all by myself, me and Led Zeppelin, being walked through all of these amazing lands that they've sung about. And they have some pretty magical lyrics too, by the way. But it also was a journey where I reconnected with my faith, because untangling religious stuff and then almost giving up on God, this journey brought me back to a really close walk with Jesus, if I could say that. So yeah, That was one of my most impactful. And then I'll share a little bit about my most recent journey, and then I'm going to hand it over to one of you. But this most recent journey with Sam a few weeks ago, it seems like we've all used the same playlist because there's a really great playlist out there, and it's got amazing undertones and different types of very emotion-filled music. And I, this time, felt just a different experience. I felt a part of the music. I felt the music was a part of me. It was my breath. It was the blood pumping through my veins. It was the goosebumps on my body. It was the breath that I already said, but it was just so impactful. And I can't personally imagine a journey without music, but we're going to talk about that too, because some people really actually prefer it. And there are some scientific facts that talk about the power of noble silence or silence in journeys. But gosh, I could talk about this all day long, but that's my story, the most distant one and the most recent one around music. So and that playlist is called Inward for anybody who's for anybody who's interested, Sam.
Yes. So all three of us have had a journey with that playlist. And so I like we're all pretty familiar with it. I've used it with other clients. And there are a couple songs toward the end that I don't know why, because like the whole playlist is like, really deep and spiritual, dark at times. And then toward the end, it gets really light, almost like saccharine sweet.
Yes.
And joy at the end of your journey, you were like, oh, this music. And like, I know it sounds like it's from a Hallmark movie. And there's one song in particular. Should I name it? Should I name names?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. It's called Solstice Dream by Todd Boston. And it's like soft guitar and a woman singing and joy. You were still kind of, in this heavy duty journey, and you said, oh, when this bitch sings, I know it's almost over.
Yeah, that was a fun part. And when you said the Hallmark movie thing, that really got me laughing too. But there were parts. Now, I switched from a more classical based journey music playlist to this one because I've sat with clients and they don't always want to stick with the classical music. There's something about this, and I'm going to ask Kristen about this too, but there's something about the way classical music is produced or I'm not using the right word for music. I know it's what's the word you use for producing music, Kristen?
Well, people produce music. I think that's
Okay.
an appropriate word.
Okay. The way it's produced, it just there's something to pull your emotions out. And at the beginning of the playlist, I think when I went into the second one, there was kind of a classical type one song on that playlist. And I just remember being in a really interesting place from the journey where I was like, okay, this is a song where the theme is for me to feel a conflict that I've experienced in my past. And I'm supposed to feel the emotions for that. And I couldn't it articulate it to you in that moment, but I was thinking, oh my God, I'm not going to let this conflict come into my journey because I don't have a conflict right now. So go on, music. It's not affecting me. And I was having this little conversation with the music in my head. It was just wild. But Kristen, I'd love to ask you about classical music. What can you tell us about your experience with classical music and emotions and how it evokes such strong emotions?
So I'm similar to you. The love of music was early and strong. I was actually allowed to join the church choir before I could read because I was just so excited about doing so. And I was involved in some form of music from that point on. I was in my first musical at age 7 because my sister got into musicals when she was in high school, and she ended up doing some sort of like local theater stuff. She even sucked my dad into it, so it's become a sort of a family affair. And that really was where my heart was at, was musical theater. But I got told over and over again that I didn't have the voice for it. And all that meant was that I didn't naturally know how to belt, but nobody, not a single adult in my life, offered to teach me how to do that. They just kept using that phrasing, like you don't have the voice for it. So I got sort of pushed into classical music, and ended up getting my undergrad degree in vocal performance in opera, even though that's really not what I enjoyed. And it sort of exacerbated my perfectionist tendencies. It's all very controlled, and that, everything needs to be just so, and there's so much structure around everything. And most of the time you're singing in a foreign language that you either need to know the language to understand what you're singing, or like people who are coming to see you don't understand it. I remember my brother-in-law coming to one of my performances and sort of teasing me, like, "Well, if they're all singing in another language, how are we going to know what you're talking about?" And I said, "Well, there's going to be super titles." And he's like, "Wait, I have to read?" Okay, so either you can read what we're saying or you cannot know what we're saying. Those are your two.
Or you can feel the music like some people do with the
Yes.
opera.
Yeah, yes, but he's not one of those people, and most of the people coming to my performances were not those kind of people. So I quickly figured out after I graduated, this is not for me. Don't regret getting the degree, but that's not where my heart was at all. And so for my first journey, Joy, you played one of those classical playlists, and I had no idea about how music played in at that point in time. So I don't even think it was a discussion. It was like you picked for me, and it ended up being a huge part of the experience because I had a blindfold on and headphones, and there were moments, like sometimes I could tell I was listening to it was outside of me, and then there were other times where it's like I was the music, or I was creating it. It was incredible, and I think I wasn't really moving except that you told me that I was sort of like conducting with my hands. So the music was the journey for me, and I was feeling a lot of emotions. One of the biggest things I remember from that experience was crying and enjoying every moment of the crying, like that being a very pleasant, drawn out experience, sort of the swelling of emotion. And I think the overall message was that, well, emotions are natural and you're supposed to feel all of them, right? This is not a bad thing. And then when we facilitated for Ronnie, she did not want to do the headphones. So that was the first time that we just had music playing for all three of us. We were all experiencing it together. And I remember this one song in particular, it sounded like it was maybe in Hebrew or something. And she just very confidently said something about how it was about someone's pain. Like she knew what the song was talking
Forgot
about.
about
Yeah. And
that. It was so powerful. She knew
yeah.
what he was saying.
And we believed her, right? It's like she said it so confidently. Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure that is what's happening, but she never knew how she knew that. And so then before my second experience, Joy, you had said something to me about, because I had this classical music background, that maybe that playlist kept me from going any deeper, because I was too familiar with it and the structure. I know there was at least one song that I recognized while I was under, and it's lovely. I still really enjoy that particular song, but yeah, just like I sang in choirs, so I know how all of that works. There's not a lot of mystery to that music for me anymore.
Yeah. And it
So,
gives you some sort of control in the journey when you
yes.
know the song, right?
Yep. So in Tulum, you switched to a more rhythmic, tribal playlist, and that was also amazing. We didn't do headphones. We had the shared speakers for that experience as well. So I could also just hear nature and the environment, and I remember that being a big thing. Like the whole world was music. The wind blowing and the birds singing and the dogs barking, that it all we are all the music. And I used music very intentionally as part of the ritual before that experience as well, because I had this idea a few months beforehand to really dig into why certain songs always make me cry. It doesn't matter that I've heard it 100 times, always make me cry. So I decided to actually write out the lyrics to those songs, and it ended up being incredibly healing. When I actually looked at the words, it made sense why I felt like they were speaking directly to me or to one of my parts. And so I did that again before the medicine, and I sang each of those songs.
And I think this would be an amazing tool for psychedelic integration for people who love music. I love that you came up with this. It actually helped me tremendously.
Because we don't think about those things, right? It's if we don't dig into why something is meaningful, then we don't have any awareness around. Doesn't mean we don't still enjoy the thing, but I feel like I enjoy it more when I know why, when there's meaning behind that. So that was healing too, like going into it, having connected to these songs, and maybe these are the ones that want to do the speaking during my journey. I'm not sure why. And then for the latest experience, we did an ancestor meditation before taking the medicine, and then we listened to the grandmother song
Oh.
as it was kicking in, because you had done that with Sam. And so I was a bit emotional right from the
Yeah.
beginning.
Yeah.
But we stuck with another tribal playlist. And this time I think I went deep enough that I don't remember as much of the music. I remember still feeling at one moment like I was creating it. I still had that experience. But I think I was more focused on thoughts and like what was going on in my head for this particular experience. I think I moved around a lot more too. But I do remember one song being a bit intense and struggling with, well, I wanted to sit with intense. I was okay with being uncomfortable. So should I skip this one or not? And you sensed something was up immediately and you lowered the volume, and then I was okay.
I think it was a very masculine song, right? It was that very, you were in a very good, like,
Yeah.
feeling place, and it was very masculine. I'll have to look that one up.
Yep. And so I've used all these playlists after each macro journey to help with integration, although I didn't want to listen to them so much that I started to memorize the songs and then couldn't use them in ceremony in the future, just knowing myself. But after Tulum, I also started putting together a playlist of those meaningful songs from my life. And it has grown quite a bit, as you can imagine. Can't be listened to in one sitting, certainly. But it's been really helpful, especially to sing to. And since I've switched to doing somatic IFS therapy, I've realized that music, that I now recognize my pull to always sing along to music. I don't want to just listen, is because it's a somatic practice, like humming. That inner vibration is a thing that tells your body you're okay and you're safe and can help you reset your nervous system. So my body knew that's what it needed and it wanted to self-soothe. And I've also recognized that some of those songs are my parts trying to communicate with me, or self wanting to reassure certain parts. So I've used music more intentionally as part of my ritual with microdosing recently, and it was very emotional. So I think I'm onto something there. And my therapist actually read some lyrics to me while I did a body scan, and I had some huge aha moments. So I am planning to do some more with that.
That is incredible. A body scan while you're having lyrics from an impactful song read to you. Wow. You just gave me the chills.
It was amazing.
Wow. Because the people who are writing this music are having their own sort of pain, and we're just connecting with, or pleasure. We're just connecting with whatever emotion that they're expressing through that song.
Yeah, those universal human experiences.
I do have a question though, because we kind of touched on it when I asked you, but what is it about classical music, even when we don't understand the language, like in going to an opera, in your own, from your perspective? It doesn't need to be, scientific or anything, but what do you think is happening? Like, I don't know Italian, but yet I can listen to an opera song and I can feel and understand what's happening.
I think to some degree it is the literal vibrations, right? Like the whatever notes are being played can hit your body in a certain way. And if you're listening at a loud enough volume, that can just, I think it can be healing. There's a reason that music has been a thing as long as humans have been a thing. I think if you're listening to really good performers, they know what they're saying. They've done the work to translate what it is they're singing, because otherwise they couldn't be acting and emoting in the way that they need to. So, whether it's Latin or Italian or French or whatever language they're singing in, even English, when it's sung operatically, is not always the easiest to understand. People have that ability to infuse the emotion into their singing. I think that is a thing I do well, because it was the only outlet for emotions that I had. It was like, oh, Kristen, don't get upset, but we applaud you when you sing this sad song. Okay, well, then I'm gonna sing a lot, and I'm gonna be drawn to sadder, more melancholy music because it allows me to process this thing. So something about the very rigid structure of classical music, it's almost like people are forced to push all their emotion into it because that's the only outlet they have.
That's so deep. And you mentioned the somatic part of it. I mean, it's so important. When you've been here, I love that you're able to sing and have your own space. And I've started, I also appreciate the fact that you let me sing badly in the car in Mexico. Yeah, I'm like, I can't sing around this opera singer. And then I was just like, fuck it. I'm just gonna sing. And she didn't make me feel bad. So that's a real true, that's true love right there. Thank you. Sam, do you sing?
Oh yeah. I'm also a big musical theater fan. So it's time, speaking of emoting, I forgot everything on the stage is about like amplifying emotion, right? Yes. So that your audience can literally feel it. Yes. So I understand that. And there's some weirdness there that I want us to explore a little bit about the vibration. Like, how is it that these vibrations are carrying emotion? Why do we feel it in our energetic bodies? It's the most fascinating thing. And I think, Kristen, actually, my major macrodose came shortly after your Tulum journey. Mine was in September of last year. And Joy, you decided to try a new playlist for me that you hadn't tried before. And it was like flute and drums, but I got a very distinct, unhealthy masculine feeling from it. And I honestly feel like this ties in a little bit to my skepticism around creating psychedelic playlists. because they are attempting to, the people that put these playlists together, they are trying to guide your journey in a way. They're trying to take you somewhere. Like Joy, you mentioned that one classical song in the playlist was put there for you to feel the conflict in your life, bring up the past trauma, bring up the conflict and face it. And it's I'm not saying it's bad. It's not bad to have a playlist and to attempt to guide people through this journey. That's not a bad thing, but it's not always right. It's not always right. And we can feel when there's a misalignment there. And my goodness, I felt it. I felt such a misalignment. I was just like, ugh, crawling in my skin. I just thought to myself, I can't wait for this song to be over. But at the time, I was telling myself, you knew this was going to be hard. You knew this was going to be a hard journey. You just have to sit here and stick it out and get to the other side. And Joy, you could sense it. You could sense it intuitively. And as soon as that song ended, you were like, oh, thank goodness that's over. Let me change it. And you said, you know what? I'm going to try this other playlist that I just used for Kristen and see how that goes. And I felt like a weight. As soon as that playlist started, I felt like a weight was lifted off of me. It felt like the sky had cleared and the sun came out. I swear everything was brighter and lighter. And I ended up having major themes in my journey of the sacred feminine energy and women stepping into their power and, that we're here to help aid in this shift, particularly away from like unhealed masculine energy, the false guru, the drowned king. And there were a couple of songs in particular that stood out to me, and oh my goodness. And the thing that ties those songs together is that it was female shamanic singing. They were female voices, and it was specifically like shamanic songs. And those are the ones that I go to when I'm doing integration, when I'm microdosing, and I want to go back to my journey. Those songs in the medicine space, they felt as if those women knew me, and it felt as if they were these like loving, I don't know, spirit or ancestral guides. And they were lifting me up into a higher vibration. They were lifting me up into a higher state and guiding me. Oh, and it was just so lovely. I cannot overstate how freaking lovely it was to hear these women's voices. It was such a relief. And it's gotten to the point now where I've listened to these songs so many times, and when I'm out in the woods at Sacred Circle, I sing, even though I don't know what it means. And now I want to go look. I want to go look and see what it means. But it's gotten to the point now where I can feel it, whether I'm microdosing or not. It takes me back into that state, takes me back into the feeling of my journey, which is mystical, powerful, and feminine. So that's my experience with the playlist. And I know that in that playlist they've put in like one, I think it's just one period of silence. There's one song that is just a stretch of silence. And I know that there are some people who say that, well, that's what's best. You should just sit in silence. Terrence McKenna, for one, has mentioned that you should just to take a very large dose and just sit in total
I
silence and see what
no,
happens.
I don't know. One day maybe you can want both of you can guide me through an experience like that. I do not know if I would be able to handle that.
I feel hesitant about it, but I'm trying to be open-minded. And we were just reading about a study just now, and I hesitate to even call it a study because there were only two research participants. But it was about silence. And it was Canadian researchers who decided to turn off the music for a 30-minute stretch during the journeys, just to see what happens. And it was two cancer patients who were doing these psilocybin experiences. And for them, the period of silence helped them reach a deeper level in their journey and in their therapeutic healing, so much so that they actually asked for more silence. So, maybe there is something to that. But what I really want to talk about is, how do you create it? How do you create a playlist? Is there a formula? Because the Johns Hopkins people, for years and years and years, they had the formula, right?
Right, they
They've
did,
been
yeah.
using the same classical music for 80 years of research,
Yes.
assuming and honestly telling everyone that that's what's best. This playlist is what is best. And we're beginning to question that now. And so, yeah, there are a lot of themes around this. Like, who gets to decide? Who gets to decide what the best music is? And, are we considering all kinds of cultural contexts? And so there's another study that we wanted to talk about today, that it was a 2020 study. They did three journeys. And this, again, was a really, really small sample size. It wasn't big at all. It was like 10 people. But they did three journeys. They did a series of three journeys. The first one, they did just the I don't know if it was the Johns Hopkins playlist, but it was a classical music playlist. The second journey, they used something that they called just an overtone playlist. And this was music that didn't necessarily have a defined rhythm or melody. It was things like Tibetan singing bowls and gongs, didgeridoos, things like that. And then for the third journey, they let the participants choose between those two playlists. Most of them chose the overtone playlist, and they ended up having more mystical experiences with that playlist. Do we need more research? Absolutely. Like, we need a larger sample size, but there's something to this. There's
Yeah.
something
Did they
to
say
it.
why they preferred the undertones to the classical music?
That was why, because it took them to a more mystical place.
Wow.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. And so, we've been using this classical music playlist for so long, and I don't want to vilify anybody here, and I'm really grateful for the years and years of research. I think that it's playing an important role in helping the Western world open up and move forward into these expanded states of consciousness. But it was done, Kristen, you and I were just talking about this, that these researchers were upper middle class white men. And maybe they feel extremely moved by classical music, but that's coming from a white, oftentimes male and rich Western lens that doesn't really reflect everybody else's experience of life and experience of spirituality. And so there's been a bit of a class divide. And I'll be honest, I've used the Johns Hopkins playlist in medicine work before, and I really don't love it. I don't love it.
I have some news for
Joy.
you. I have some news for you. The one that we've been praising is actually a John Hopkins playlist also.
Oh, is it?
Yes,
Really?
the
Okay.
N-word that we all experience. Now, I found this on Spotify. It says John Hopkins playlist. I can't validate that. So maybe somebody just created this amazing playlist and put John Hopkins tags on it. But yeah, these can be found on Spotify, by the way. Guided psychedelic journeys, psilocybin journeys. But yeah, it
Yeah.
says John Hopkins on it.
I know that they've crafted playlists because, they've done so much research and they have a general understanding of the flow of a psychedelic journey, right? And that's why they choose the pieces of music that they choose, because they have recognized a pattern and they're picking music that matches the pattern. So I don't know. And this kind of brings me to a big thing I want to talk about, which is East Forest.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And
Yes.
I've
Before you move on to that, though, I really want to interject because something you said brought up a couple things for me. Now, as you've worked with clients, I know you've had a couple of interesting experiences with music, but I have to share. There was one client who I shared the first John Hopkins playlist, the very classical based one. And I think about four songs in, the emotions just became too much for her. And she literally ripped the headphones off. It was like, nope, I'm not doing this. And so we had to go outside. We had to change the environment, get the setting right for her to enjoy. But some, yeah, you're right. Some people, maybe it was too much emotion. Maybe it was the wrong playlist. But for her, it was completely done. And then we came back and listened to country music. So. I just
Yeah,
want to throw that in there.
I think it's it just comes down to everybody being different, and we don't know where they're coming from. We don't know what their life experience is. We don't know what is meaningful to them. And Sam, you talking about the vibrational aspect, but like emotions are just physical symptoms in your body, right? Like they're kind of a vibrational thing happening. So it does make sense to me that an external vibration could remind you of that feeling or like make that happen in your body. And I don't think most people understand how much class and religion influence classical
Oh my
music.
gosh. I was thinking
It's
earlier when you were
part of
like, it's
it.
in another language, how much of it is Latin and how much of it is like
On
in
purpose.
excelsis Deo?
Right, like what it was this huge deal when priests were able to face the congregation and speak in their local language and not have to do the entire mass in Latin. Well, that's how like all operas had to be in Italian. That's what was the high class thing. So if you've ever watched Amadeus, it talks about that. People have this very uptight view of opera, but opera, we've made it uptight. It didn't start out that way. People had the score in front of them when they would go to see a performance, and they would talk through. They'd be following along in the music. They'd be talking to each other. They'd be eating. It was not an uptight, quiet thing that we turned into. And so, yeah, when you watch Amadeus, Mozart, who I'm not a fan of, but he desperately wanted to write things for everybody. He wanted to write an opera in German that everyone could understand, not in Italian, like he was instructed to do by the powers that be at the time. So I think it's possible that it can be triggering things for people that they don't even realize. Even if you aren't a super religious person, it can still have that connotation. Like, well, this sounds like church, and I don't want to be reminded of church. But for people for whom that's important, it makes all the sense in the world to me that that would be meaningful to you, that you would listen to that, and that it would bring up all of those emotions, and that you would want to share that experience with the people that you were studying. So I think it's your intentions are good, right? It's just everybody has biases and blind spots, and they don't necessarily realize the particular lens they're bringing to the thing.
That's fascinating. I have never looked at that type of music from that perspective of like how they were trying to keep it just for a certain class of people. That makes so much sense, Kristen.
That's what humans have always done, right? How can we break each other into these different groups?
I got it. Actually, I just remembered something about this playlist, the inward playlist that the three of us have now had experiences with. My husband hated it. He hated that playlist. He had me turn it off.
Really?
And of course, like I was trying not to feel offended, but okay. And you're right. It's different. It's different people. It's going to evoke different emotions in different people, and that's okay. That's all right. Not everybody is going to resonate with the same thing. And it is at a very literal level. It is resonance, right? And so,
So that when you said that thing about the silence too, I could see all of it going both ways. And I don't know how you prove that with science. I don't know how you study it. There's so many factors that you can't have a control to like tune out the thing you're not studying. So for the people who preferred the silence, I can see neurodivergent folks with sensory issues were like, yeah, the sound would be way too much. And I already deal with a world that is bombarding me with sound I don't want to hear and can't tune out. So it would be this like peaceful, blissful break to not listen to anything. But then for other people to use that as an out to not feel anything, right? I want to listen to more silence because the music is making me feel things and that's too hard and I don't want to face that. So I think everybody has to figure that out for themselves, and it's likely going to be different every time, depending on where you're at in your life and in your own healing journey. So it requires a little bit of self-awareness and being present with what's coming up for you at the time.
Yes. But there does tend to be a pattern, right, of a psychedelic journey. Like we have the onset and then it builds in intensity and you reach a peak and then it begins to taper off and then you're gliding. And so now I offer the people that I do medicine work, I offer to either choose a playlist for them or have them build their own playlist, but I do give them kind of like, well, here's the arc, here's the general arc of the journey. So if you'd like, you can pick, like 45 minutes worth of music that is relaxing and uplifting, makes you feel safe, makes you feel comfortable, and then maybe some music that makes you feel intense emotion. Doesn't have to be good or it doesn't have to be bad. You just choose whatever resonates with you. Maybe choose like 2 hours worth of intense music with it kind of building up and then tapering off. So like, give people the information about the pattern and then allow them to bring their own playlist.
Yeah. I
Yeah,
think
and I have had a client do that, and she's very, very much into music, and she had the journey that she was meant to have.
Yeah, I could see that being amazing. I think the overtone thing is really interesting too. I mean, sound healing is a thing for a reason, right? That the whole concept of overtones is just that the vibration of the tone that's being played can trigger vibrations above it. So it's just making other things resonate, sometimes, in the same key, sometimes not. So it can create all these really interesting sounds. But I think the longer you sit in that, maybe the less aware you are of your own, less aware or more aware of your own body. I can see both where you're like, you're sort of connected to everything. You're not sure where you end, but you also are probably feeling things in your body that you aren't normally paying attention to. So that I could see being really healing and interesting and sort of help with the losing track of time, right? Like, what does time mean if it's just sort of the same thing over and over again and you're not being instructed, this is where we are in the playlist. Again, I don't know how you study those things. People have to kind of just play with it.
And we know if you look at like Francois Bozzat's consciousness medicine, there are different types of psychedelic experience. There are categories, right? And that's not to say that one is better than another, but we have some categories that are very embodied, very much in the physical world. And then there are other journeys where you lose track of all reality. You're in a different place. And there's a big part of me that's like, who is the music to tell me what kind of journey? Kind of like Joy, the song that came up, and you were like, nope, I'm not gonna go there. And so I unintentionally developed this kind of skepticism toward people who are using music to dictate what kind of experience people are having. And I feel like kind of a jerk saying this. East Forest, if you ever listen to this, I'm so sorry. I've completely changed my mind and opinion about you. But I'd heard about East Forest, and he's like, the music for mushrooms guy, among others. There's, John Hopkins and some other big names in the psychedelic music industry. But I just was skeptical. I thought to myself, yeah, who are they to tell us how this is supposed to go? And then I had an opportunity actually to watch East Forest's new documentary, Music for Mushrooms. And it was talking about, how he made that album, which is really, it's super long, hours and hours long, because it's intended to use for journeys. And as I was watching this documentary, I'll be honest, I had taken a microdose, but I went into it maybe a little bit closed-minded and cold-hearted. And I just completely changed my mind. I was not expecting to feel so much emotion. I cried multiple times while watching the documentary. And I now believe that there are people who have these intuitive gifts. They're really tapping into something. I know, and I completely trust now that East Forest has a genuine relationship with the medicine. And not only that, he is in real time sensing what's going on with the people who are journeying, and he's responding in real time to that. And it's an incredibly intuitive practice. It's really beautiful. And so now, live music only. I mean, just kidding, but maybe there is a future in which East Forest comes in place for a
That's what
retreat.
I said. I look at it through a different lens. I understand the rebellion there, absolutely. I see it more as a gentle intro. If you are new, all of it can be overwhelming, especially if you're like me and you struggle with perfectionism. If you had given me the assignment to go make my own playlists, I guarantee you I would have been paralyzed trying to pick the right things, having no idea what the right things were. It was the same with intentions and like all of the preparation work. I think people need a starting place, and that those are good places to start. They will hold you. There's enough variety that you can find one that will be a good fit. It doesn't have to be the classical one. And like creativity requires a little bit of constraint. So having that starting point, I think, allows you to open up a bit and then figure out, oh, this is what worked for me and this is what didn't. And now I can go searching for the thing that does fit me a little better. So I think there are certainly people out there who are using it in that manner. Like, no, you can only listen to these playlists because they've been studied by science. But I think the people doing the science are not those people. I think they genuinely want to study this thing and they want to help as many people as possible, and that they know that the inroads to do that are to have something be science backed, right? We're kind of trapped in this loop for a while to prove that these things help people so that we can decriminalize, so that people can start using it in therapy. Like we have to start somewhere. But yeah, the more you are on this path, I think the more you can take the reins for yourself and make your own ritual out of it, make your own sacredness. So like you mentioned John Hopkins, I just saw that he released a new album called Ritual. That's
What?
yeah, it's only about 45 minutes. It is not meant to be used for a mushroom journey, but I used it for microdosing the other day. And
Ooh.
yeah, it was kind of nice to just have something that I didn't have to go through and put together myself. It was quite lovely.
I've microdosed with that one too and
Yeah.
had some pretty intense experiences.
Y'all left me out of this one. Can you please share? I guess
Yes.
I'll find it now.
Yes, I can send it to you.
Oh my
Yes.
goodness. I'm just so glad that research is getting to the point now where they're beginning to ask questions, is it really best to listen to classical music? Is it best to have music 100% of the time? These are important questions. And, ideally, as facilitators, we have options and we empower our clients to be able to speak up or signal to us in some way that they need us to make a change.
Well, and
And,
it doesn't need to be, that's not going to be the ideal experience, period, if you're in this clinical setting, right? I think they know that because just the metaphor of I've had sleep studies done, right? You're measuring my sleep in the worst possible environment for sleep. You're hooking me up to all these different gadgets. You're making me sleep on my back when I don't sleep on my back, and I'm in a completely unfamiliar room. That's not the point, right? We're not capturing data on the best sleep of your life. We're just trying to figure out what's going on in your body. I think
When you're
that's
under duress from someone
right.
else's instructions.
Right. Yeah.
Jeez.
Have fun. It's really not.
Have a lot to say about that, but yes, I have been to a group ceremony where there was live music, which was great. It was an indigenous person in Costa Rica who was leading it, but then the facilitator thought we needed longer periods of silence. And in a group of 40 people, when other people are struggling and all you're hearing is the noises that they're making, it is not always ideal. But that's just my own little opinion.
Well, that's valuable. That's valuable information. Yeah. I have one more study to mention. Actually, it's two studies, but they were working on the same thing. They were comparing psilocybin to Lexapro and then measuring how the participants' brains responded to music. And what they noticed was that the SSRI, the antidepressant, dampened all emotional response, both positive and negative, while the psilocybin enhanced it. So it's like this beautiful, and people have known, oh my gosh, people have known this for thousands of years. There's this beautiful relationship between music, vibration, drumming, and going into these deeply altered states.
And when we talk about altered states of consciousness, it doesn't always mean psychedelics, because as you're talking about drumming and the rhythm, I'm thinking about powwows and how
Right.
when I was ages 7 through 15, I could go in that ring and dance and be tranced by the drums, and I can go back to those moments like as if they were yesterday, and there was no psychedelics involved. I was just really in tune with these people who were in tune with the music that they were making from their souls and their hearts. And whoo, that's something else.
That can be breath work or cold plunging. It does not need to be a substance.
Right. Yeah, we should definitely have. Well, I use the should word. I don't like that word. We are going to talk about other altered states of consciousness in the future as well, not just psilocybin, which we're fond of, but I think that we've had a lot to say about music. Have we missed anything today, ladies? Or is there anything else on your mind you'd like to share before we depart from our music and psychedelics podcast? Do, 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 do.
You know I'm going to think of something as soon as we're done.
Of course, of course.
I would put a statement out there about how necessary music and other art is, and it is frequently the thing that is treated as a luxury that we can just get rid of because people have no idea how integral it is to your life. I've made a comment on multiple occasions that I just wish there was a way for all music to like go on strike. It's not even possible because it's around you constantly. It's in commercials to make you comfortable. It's in elevators to make you comfortable. People
Grocery
have no
store.
idea. Yeah, they could not handle pure silence, and yet this thing that is fundamental to being human is treated as a thing that isn't worthy and certainly not worth paying someone for, right? Like that idea of the starving artist is still alive and well, and I will never understand that. That if you love to do something, you don't deserve to be compensated for it or supported in doing it, when it is a thing that connects us all to one another and is as necessary as air.
Beautifully said, Kristen.
Any last thoughts, Sam?
Well, now I'm actually gonna go take a look at those few songs that really speak to me and see if I can get some more information on them.
Yeah, I love this. This is a really good integration tool. So I encourage anyone who's listened to this podcast to maybe, take a try, pick a song that made you feel an emotion and write it down. See what the lyrics are and how it speaks to you. I'm probably going to start posting on Instagram lyrics. I started designing a Canva lyric series because I'm all up in the lyrics, y'all. So yeah, I don't have subscribers on Instagram, so I'm just doing it for myself and my own healing. But yeah.
Yes.
So this is a really special to us episode of the Wayfinder Psychedelic Collective because we love music, but we also understand that music might not always be the answer. And I'm sure there are studies where people have gone into sensory deprivation tanks and done psychedelics, and maybe we can explore those at some point. But if you've been listening and you have any topics that you'd like to hear or any things that you want to talk to us about, we are so open. We have some things coming up, but thank you for tuning in. This has been the Wayfinder Psychedelic Collective. I'm Joy Whitmore.
I'm Samantha McLennigan.
And I'm Kristen Shirky.
And we say safe journeys, safe travels, and see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.